Episode 1, Home. Hi, I'm Victor Allen. If you know me, go by Scorch online. And this is going to be my first podcast. Hopefully one of many. And we'll see how it goes. So home is a really complicated subject for me. I grew up notionally in Alabama. But I get a lot of questions. Hey, where are you from? As you can tell, I don't really have a whole lot of an accent. Although people tell me when I leave the South that I do have an accent. And they'll ask me to say y'all or do something else, sort of performative act that lets them know, hey, I'm from here. In the South, I got told, hey, you don't have an accent. And truth be told, I never have. I don't know if it was me cultivating that or unconsciously trying to rebel against my parents, but I never, ever have had an accent as long as I've been in the South. Now, what does this mean, really? Well, home is a real nebulous subject for me. I've moved around a lot. I counted it out, and I think I'm up to about 20 moves so far in my 36 years on the planet. So, yeah, I've been to a lot of places. I've moved around a lot. I know what to look for when we're moving out of a place. I know what to look for when we're moving into a place. I'm pretty good at figuring out when a landlord's going to be a jerk and when they're going to be pretty cool. I've also lived on ships and submarines, bases. Even spent the night on deserted islands. But I think as I talk about home, you know, we always talk about what we're talking about when we're talking about things. For me, home is less of a place and more of an idea. And yeah, that's not really groundbreaking material. But I think how I got there is worth exploring. So today we're going to explore, you, the listener, and me, the talker, about how I got to feel like I had a home. In the process in getting there. So the first place that I'd like to talk about is my current home, which is Djibouti, Africa. For those of you who know me, I'm currently deployed, and I live in a CLU. A CLU is a containerized living unit. They basically took a long shipping container, cut it in half, stuck a bathroom in the middle with a shower and a toilet, and then on the ends, you get some living space. The walls are metal. The ceiling's metal. There's lots of exposed piping, wiring, such, well, not wiring, but conduits. I do have a split unit air conditioner, and I keep a dehumidifier in here to make sure that no mold grows. There's not really very much of a outside view. There are no windows. If I open up the door, I can see outside, but pretty much what it looks like is District 9. If you've ever seen that movie, you know what I'm talking about. Just stacks upon stacks of different clues with metal grating for our walkways in front of the clues, and then you make your way down to the gravel area downstairs, and then you can walk towards your office. Of course, I live in a little bit different area than the rest of the population here, as I do a little bit more of a special job. I actually get to walk maybe a quarter mile to work every day. Most people walk about a mile or so because of what they do on base. So home here, I don't know. It's all right. It's definitely better than the ship. You know, I get my own room. I get my own bed. It's a twin bed. It's nothing crazy, but it's mine. And I've got all my stuff up on the walls here. My Valentine's Day card from Maddie. I've got various toys and things that people have sent me to try to keep my spirits up as I stay out here. So I'm able to make this space my own. Now I'm here for 6 months. So making it home is a little bit, you know, difficult. You know, you don't want to really spend too much time getting your stuff all set up because by the time you get that way, well, it's about time to start packing things up and sending them home. So I've got a few things set up here. Like I said, you know, the things that remind me of home. One thing I also want to mention is this awesome 3D printed ghost from Destiny 2 that my friends John and Swoozy got me, my teammates, I should say, before I left. So that's a really great thing. One of the things that keeps me grounded in my home is those reminders of the real home that I have back in Ohio. But everybody does a lot of different things to try to make their space their own. Pictures, putting down carpet is a big deal. You'd be surprised how much carpet can really, or just small area rugs, can really bring to a room that is otherwise really drab, boring, and lifeless. People also, so yeah, Djibouti, you know, home here. It is what it is. The food is sustenance worthy. It's nothing to write home about, except when the local host nation people make their local cuisines. So we get some Somali food, some Indian food, some Sri Lankan food, and some other food from the continent or subcontinent, I should say. And it's that tastes really good. Everything else is passable, and I'm not going to die, but it's not something that I would write home about. Ironically, here feels more like home than a lot of the previous places that I lived for far longer. Like I said, I grew up in the South, so I was born in Alabama, in Mobile, where I spent the first 2 years of my life. I honestly don't remember a thing out of that. I know we lived somewhere in the city, and that eventually we moved from there to Monroe, Georgia, where my dad was establishing his practice. The first place we lived in was Holly Hill Road. I've got actually pretty strong memories of Holly Hill Road because my family actually videotaped us using a camcorder as we came up the hill and saw the house for the first time. Now, that being said, you know, I have those memories of it, but even then, it never really felt like home. I've got some interesting family history, by which I mean dad has been cheating on mom, and I've got some really interesting family history, by which I mean, you know, my family has been sort of topsy-turvy since almost day one. And one of my earliest real memories from Holly Hill, of course, is consoling my mom and telling her that it's going to be okay, that dad is leaving and that we're going to be just fine. And this is when I was about 4 and my younger brother has just born. So that didn't really feel like home. It always felt temporary. It always felt kind of ephemeral, if I can put a word to it. I think ephemeral would be that one. And it's not really a terrific place. I remember that there was a carport there. And that we had yellow jackets that had burrowed into or made their home in the carport. And I got stung by a bunch of them one time. I remember learning to ride a bike there. And I remember trick-or-treating there. So I've got some decent memories, some pretty good first memories. But, and again, it never really felt like home. And I still to this day have always thought about, what does it mean for something to feel like home? So So even in Monroe, in that first house, we didn't really have it. Now, we moved around a lot, like I said. I mean, we were always on the move. I don't think we spent more than 4 or 5 years in one house, you know, until I turned 17 and went off to college. So until I turned 17 and went off to college. So it's very much a, like I said, that ephemeral thing. So after we moved out of the Holly Hill house, because it was on the outskirts of the actual town proper, this small town, not that, you know, a small southern town really has outskirts, you know, or a really definable urban core. But dad or mom, one or the other, wanted to move in closer. So we moved into this old 1910 era house that was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. I remember it had hardwood floors. I shared a room with my brother, except I had the street light shining into my eyes every night, no matter which way I had the blinds turned. No matter which way I had the blinds turned, the light was shining in on my eyes. I didn't really mind sharing a room with my brother, and I really liked the fact that we had a big ravine out back that I could explore in. I also had some good friends in the neighborhood, some kids my age, and I'd go and hang out at their house and learned about superstitions like, oh, it's, you know, unlucky to wear only one sock at a time and to walk around the house. So it was a really good and interesting time to grow up. But again, we only stayed there for maybe 2 or 3 years, and then boom. We're moving again. So we moved from that place, which whatever road that was, to this small, honestly, this very small house in a new, very suburban neighborhood, kind of on the outskirts of the city again. And it was way too small for us at this point. You know, we're 5 people strong. And then when my half-siblings would come into town, there's 7 people trying to fit into this teeny tiny house. So eventually we converted the garage into a living area, which I didn't even know you could do that, but my uncles showed us that you could. And it felt a little bit like home. I mean, again, you know, these memories that, you know, you think of home as this like place that you can go to, you can return to, and it feels good and warm. But also it should be like the source of your memories, right? A lot of the memories of growing up. And for me, about the only memory I can remember, I got 2 memories. One of them is when I tried to stop a grinder with my thumbnail because I thought it would hurt less, which of course took off the entire thumbnail and left me with a sweet scar that I still have to this day. And then I remember Friday the 13th, one October night. It was Friday the 13th in October, and it was in the late 80s or early 90s. I can't remember which. but I was with my friends, and these are some older friends of mine, I guess at the time. I just remember they were older, and we would hide out in the ditch, the drainage ditch that ran to the, we would hide out in the drainage ditch that ran right by the road that was really close to the neighborhood. And then we would put rocks in the road. Eventually we saw people swerve, and then boom, somebody hit one and blew out their tire. And then they went berserk. They went absolutely berserk and were mad and started looking for us. And I'm sure it didn't help that we looked guilty as hell running away from the scene of the crime. But that's it. That's about all we got for memories there. I remember when we had just finished. That's about it. So yeah, and then Dad decided that Monroe was played out, or maybe Mom decided, and he didn't want to live down there anymore, so we wanted to move to the bustling metropolis of Athens, Georgia. So we moved up to Athens into this gigantic house, absolutely huge, and I was thrilled. I really enjoyed that house. Again, we had the ravine out back. It was on a hill, so I could, you know, do stupid things like try to ride a scooter and fly a kite at the same time, again, resulting in another pretty sweet scar. It was pretty close to school, the school that we went to, so, you know, we didn't have to drive too far, and it was bike friendly. I remember being able to ride my bike pretty much everywhere, even up and down the kind of major thoroughfare that was ran in front of the neighborhood, you know, this very suburban, you know, kind of closed off one way in, one way out neighborhood. But it was that was the closest thing that I thought of as home for the longest time. You know, we had great Christmases there, had a really nice fireplace, some good memories, and really just some good stuff. And it seemed the most stable that we had ever been as far as our family goes. Dad didn't leave, which was great. We had, you know, a lot to do. You know, I was between, you know, 9 and 12, you know, some pretty formative years, and, you know, kind of starting to feel my independence and really enjoying living out there. And I also saw myself, like, eventually maybe moving into the basement, which kind of had its own HVAC and its own living area, and be like, oh, okay, yeah, I can definitely do this. I can absolutely, once I get old enough, just not have to deal with Mom and Dad. Because by that time, I had already determined I did not want to deal with my parents very much. I'd already come out as an atheist. I'd already made my mom cry and said, you know, I don't really believe in God. And it was an interesting time for me, kind of pushing the boundaries of my parents and probably what they had expected from their young son. So yeah, that was about the first time that I really felt like we had a home. And then my grandfather died. So my grandfather had lived in Mobile for most of his life, as had my dad before he moved away and started doing his own life. But my grandfather never moved away, and he was very well respected in the community, very well known. When we moved back down there, I had teachers come up to me and say, hey, I knew your grandfather. So my grandfather died, and it affected my dad more profoundly than I'd ever seen anything affect him. And then at some point, he just decided that, well, I guess it's time to move. So we packed up 3 tractor trailers worth of stuff and moved from Athens to Mobile. Now, Dad didn't really do a great job of scoping out the place, because we moved to what was then the western edge of Mobile, out in the suburbs. And this house that, again, was just way too small for the stuff we had. Most of our things were in storage, and we could not make this work. So we stayed there for about a year. Again, some good memories, you know? Again, feeling my independence, taking my bike everywhere. I had friends in that neighborhood, friends in the neighborhood that was just down the road. I really enjoyed it, and it was cool. You know, I felt like I could really kind of push the boundaries and ride my bike really everywhere and try to get a sense of what living in a city meant. Because we were still in the city, just the western edge of it. But like I said, it's too small. It was just way too small. My room there is smaller than my room here in Djibouti. And it was just not, there's no way that it was going to work out for us, as the amount of stuff that we had. And the lifestyle that my parents really wanted to live, which is this very boomer, maximalist, keeping up with the Joneses lifestyle. So we moved, again, to a condo, a 3-story condo in the heart of Midtown Mobile, this place called Canongate. We were the only kids there. Pretty sure Mom and Dad brought down the average age there. And there wasn't really a whole lot for us to do. You know, it was kind of secluded from everything, back away from stuff. My friends that did live in Midtown lived a little bit far away, like further than I felt comfortable riding my bike, especially all of the major traffic thoroughfares that ran through Midtown. But again, you know, I was really starting to do some more exploring, kind of coming of age. At this point, I had the internet. Holy crap, I've got the internet, and now I can reach out and see what the internet's all about. At the time, which was 1995, it was not about very much. There wasn't a whole lot out there, not so really interesting, but hey, it's there, and it's kind of cool, and there's these chat rooms and stuff like that. I mean, you know, we had I got into IRC, found other like-minded nerds, and tried not to look too unintelligent when I spoke. Of course, I gave away. I was a dead giveaway as a young person. You know, very, very obvious that I was someone who didn't have a whole lot of experience in the world, but that's okay. They were accepting, and they took me in as one of their own, and I had a great time. Again, kind of learning how things work. But again, we're in a condo. Still not quite able to fit all our stuff there. And it's pretty expensive because it's a condo. But, I mean, I was happy. I didn't have to mow the lawn anymore. And I had been mowing these big-ass lawns, you know, like all over the South. Basically, everywhere we'd moved, that was my job, was to take care of the lawn. And now I didn't have to because, well, the condo fees paid for all that. And now I didn't have to because the condo fees paid for all that. So, yeah, my friends really enjoyed coming over, you know, because we were pretty close to some other things. You know, you could ride the bike to school. My school, ironically, was close. Really, literally down the road, maybe half a mile or a mile down the road. So, hey, really easy to get to school, right? Really easy to get dropped off or, you know, say, I'll just say, hey, mom, I'm walking home or whatever. And I could do that. It somehow felt easier to walk home than to ride my bike home, but there it is. And I thought things were going good. And then Dad moved out again. So he moved out, and he'd been keeping this place. He'd been keeping what we would call the river house as his kind of like, you know, place to live, you know, when he wanted to get away from the family or do whatever it is that he wanted to do down there. So it's interesting occasionally staying down there because I didn't feel like home either. I mean, this was obviously Dad's bachelor crash pad that smelled like the 50s and diesel fuel. It was not great, not really intended for kids, but it was where Dad was. So occasionally we'd spend the weekend there and go visit Dad. I guess it's worth mentioning at this point that at no point did my parents get divorced until I was way gone. So Dad wanted to come back, and he did. And he was dissatisfied with the lack of open space in the condo. So hey, we moved again. This time up to the bustling metropolis of 8 Mile, Alabama. 8 Mile, so named because it's 8 miles north of the mouth of the Mobile River, is kind of in between two totally disparate areas. The first is Saraland, S-A-R-A-L-A-N-D, a small bedroom community north of Mobile that really kind of serves as like a bastion of white flight. On the other side is Pritchard, which was carved out of Mobile as a majority black city to ensure that Mobile itself would not be a majority black city. You can probably feel the tension just aching between these two areas, and 8 Mile was ground zero. So both areas would try to annex this sort of unincorporated part of 8 Mile into each other because there was a fairly large tax base there, but neither of them could really gain a foothold, and nobody wanted to really cross that bridge. They all wanted to resolve it peacefully, but they also wanted the money. So yeah, interesting times. So we're in this house in 8 Mile, and it is a god-awful McMansion. I'm sure some of you have seen that Tumblr, McMansion Hell. And this was exactly one of those. I mean, bump outs, crazy layout. Like, this was not an open floor plan whatsoever. There were dividers. There were places where a door should have gone but didn't. So it's just an entryway that just makes it really difficult to see around the corner. And it had the kids on one end of the house with the parents on the other end, and with only one real, so slightly inaccessible way for us to all get to the same spaces. Had a pool out back, had a massive yard. So, of course, I get the short straw of taking care of both of those things. But I had a big room, and the room had access to the attic, which is kind of where I went to be alone with my thoughts and such. Like a real big room, like a room that was meant for really two people to live in, but, you know, whatever. I get my own. That's fine. So I had my drums there, had my computer there, recorded my first demos there. Really, if there's one place that feels like home or felt like home to me, it was my room. My room was my solace. It was my room was my place of solitude. It was where I wanted to be most of the time when I wasn't out with my friends. But the rest of the house felt cold. Like I said, odd angles. And you can tell when something hasn't really been designed with any sort of consistency in mind. Like you want to take a step, but that, you know, that's going to take you into a corner or a wall. Not great. I got the opportunity a couple years ago to take Maddie down to the Gulf Coast, and we stopped by Mobile and I showed her the house, and she said, wow, it's big. It's kind of laid out weird. And I know she's being nice because it's an ugly house. It is a straight up ugly house, and it is absolutely atrocious. Of course, there's not much I can do about that, all those memories now, but yeah, going back and seeing it as an adult, a fully fledged adult, you kind of get a different sense of really what that was about. So there wasn't, and Dad, of course, eventually ended up just moving out anyway, shortly after we closed the house, of course. And that was the last time I think that he and my mom were under the same roof before they got divorced. And they stayed married for, God, almost 20 years. And I'd say probably less than half that time they were under the same roof. Really crazy, right? So after that, I went off to college. And what would college be if not, you know, a series of very transient living arrangements where you're not really, there's nothing that you would ever call home in college. It's by definition, it's temporary until you can figure something else out. So yeah, none of that was home either. But I came home a lot my first year. I mean, a lot. I credit the depression for that. I came home, I'd say not every weekend, but definitely once or twice a month. I'd make the 4-hour drive from Atlanta to Mobile, which then turned into the 3-hour and 50-minute drive, which then turned into the 3.5-hour drive, which one time turned into the 3-hour and change ride. And that was probably excessive, but again, it shows, hey, I actually did enjoy being home and seeing my friends. And by this point, my dad had remarried. And so he's now got another big house in the middle of Mobile. And you try to work with it, right? You know, this was, you know, my first experience with a remarriage. I didn't particularly care for my stepmother at the time. But then, you know, I was like, okay, whatever. I can deal with anything. I can deal with anything. It's going to be fine. I'll be okay. Then my dad and I had a falling out, one of our many falling outs. And all of a sudden I had half the homes that I thought I had. So we didn't talk for a few years. But what I did was try to stay in touch with mom and, you know, go home there. Try to make that my home. But again, never really felt like home. It just felt like a temporary base. That kind of brings us up to about the point where we're talking about. So college was a nightmare of moving around. College, you know, you move around and it's good. You're moving around. You're enjoying yourself. You're feeling what it is like to be an independent adult without all of the strictures and norms of really being an independent adult. And that kind of carried over into flight school. So it's interesting. I got my commission. I moved from Atlanta down to Pensacola, and I was just waiting to start school, so living with some friends. And for the first time in my life, I had a steady paycheck coming in. Not a whole lot of money, but enough to pay the rent, pay for my newly acquired uniforms, and pay for food, and, you know, a little bit of booze here and there. So I enjoyed myself to my utmost, but that definitely wasn't home. That was a short period of time. That was July to October. And while I had a fantastic time just enjoying myself up there, not great. While I had a fantastic time enjoying myself up there, that's not home. That's just, you know, temporary stuff. And of course, that very impermanent nature of your accommodations comes to define you as you're in the military. You know that wherever you are, odds are good you're going to be there for 3 years or less. And given it takes you about 6 months to really get your bearings, you've got maybe 2 good years with people that you might like. Maybe you like. Hopefully you like. So I bounced around when I was going through flight school, moved, you know, several different places, made it up to Norfolk. So for a while I lived in this apartment in Norfolk. I should say Norfolk. I lived in this apartment in Virginia Beach, and I made it 9 months there before I moved out because I had to deploy. So I deploy, I come back, and I find a house I want. And I find a house that I want. I really, really like this house. This house, it just speaks to me. It spoke to me the first time that I saw it. And yeah, it's amazing. So I buy it. This is the summer of 2007. And I'm not sure, for those of you who recall, what was going on in 2007. But that was about the peak of the market. The very top of the market was when I bought a house. Even after the crash, I didn't care. I still love the house. I still own the house to this day. Obviously, I don't live in it, but I still own it. And it is something that for the first time ever really said, hey, you're home. This is yours. And you should feel safe here. Now, the house has its own special proclivities, you know, among them a tilt and a propensity to attract rodents into the walls and ceilings. But you take care of those as they come around and it still feels like home. Maddie really helped me make it feel like home when she said, hey, let's paint it and put things on the walls so it doesn't look like a serial killer lives here. I think really that's what comes to define a home, is the love that people bring to it. Yeah, my house felt like a home for a long time before I ever met Maddie. But it was, you know, that feeling was doubled and tripled and, you know, just continued to grow as we developed our relationship together, and it kind of centered around the house. And it made us feel safe and secure to know that, hey, this is ours. This is what we have together. You know, the stuff that we made together. We painted this. We put up these pictures. We designed the house and the furniture the way we wanted to. So that was kind of the first real inkling of home, was that house in Norfolk. Now, again, I had that before I ever met Maddie. So it was it's mine more than it is Maddie's, as much as she put her heart, soul, and blood and tears into it. But it is more mine than hers. Now, that changed pretty radically when we moved up to Ohio. So we bought a house up there as well. And this is now where, this is where we live currently. Well, I'm on assignment, so that's not where I currently live. But this is where we've established really that feeling of home, that feeling of, you know, hey, this is mine. This is what I created. This is really a very warm place, a place that you feel safe in, that you know intimately. You know, okay, when this switch is up, that light on the opposite side of the house isn't going to work because it's wired weird because it's almost 200 years old. You get it. You understand the ins and outs of it. And maybe that's a little bit aspirational because right now we're still in a little bit less than 2 years of owning it. And it is built. It was built 190 years ago. And that leads to a lot of interesting things, such as switches turning on lights clear across the house, or random noises as the house continues to settle and just, you know, creaks a little bit. But again, that's ours. And we make it ours by establishing those memories, those rituals, such as, you know, Saturday breakfast. You know, I'll cook some pancakes, some eggs, some sausage. I'll make and if we're having biscuits, we'll have sausage gravy and biscuits. And that's our routine. And it feels very much ours. And that's how I really came to establish that house as a home. I hope you enjoyed this. I really had a lot of fun making it. I'm probably saying some stuff on here that maybe you didn't know about. And if so, that's great. Please feel free to ask me questions about it. I look forward to the feedback that I'll get from it. And if I did say things that you knew about, but were kind of surprised that I said anyway, send me that feedback too. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.